Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, you guys. Well, I'm going to keep it brief as far as our kind of going back to last week, only because I don't really know how to bring a picture of the fullness that was imparted over last week. So there's a specific word that I want to take from what was released over us and allow it to position us moving into tonight. I don't know how you all personally felt after Friday night, but what I experienced was a new coming under. I feel like another aspect of Yahweh was revealed to us that I don't know I've ever encountered in the way that I did, which was what I would, in my lack of knowledge or experience or understanding to that whole kind of realm or world of Yahweh as a strategist. I understand Yahweh as Father. I understand Yahweh as ruler, as a king, as a creator or the creator. I feel like those are aspects of him that I have encountered, but I don't know that I've ever sat under him as a strategist to where I'm recognizing that I'm not a civilian. That's the exchange that took place in my heart last week, which I believe was kind of falling over the house as a whole, which is powerful because what we stepped into last week was movement. And as we prepare to physically move as a company of people, Yahweh, who already has given us everything we need, he gathered us together, and in this new, I don't know, like way of me relating to him, he told us, you aren't a normal person. You're not a civilian anymore. So what I mean by that is I had to dig a little deeper throughout the week into what does it actually mean? I've heard that term before. What does it mean to be a civilian? What does it mean if you're not a civilian? Like those who say, okay, that's a civilian lifestyle. Or, I mean, I've heard those kinds of terms, but what does that really mean? And so a civilian really is just representing someone who has a life outside of a service role. Okay, so in the spirit, what happened as we were sent into movement was the strategist sat us down and said, you no longer are allowed or afforded a life outside of a service role. And part of why we lived a life outside of a service role is like what was released last week. We believed that we were the ones who got to demand his service. If we're the strategist, we're the ones with the commands, we're the ones with the directives, and we're the ones with the authority that get to tell him what he does, where he's meant to go, how he's going to do it, and how it's going to meet my need. Right? Okay. But if now I'm relinquishing that role and I'm acknowledging that I'm not the strategist, I'm a tacticianary. How do I say that, Dad? How do I say it? That was fine? Okay. if that is my place, right, then that means that the shift that happened last week is that I now have a service role under the strategist. Okay? And what I also thought was interesting when I was trying to press into what did you challenge me in last week and what did you essentially pull me out of the civilian life that I've lived? Well, one of the things that came during that study this week was that there's, if you are a civilian, you are left vulnerable because you are not, I'm trying to explain words that I'm still understanding, so Dad, you can definitely speak to this better, but that a civilian's lifestyle, it like emphasizes their non-combatant status. Okay, they're not equipped or qualified or even legally qualified to be combatant when that time comes. But now under the strategist, after last week, as we've been put into formation, and he says, you have everything you need, you have been fully equipped. Not just did he equip us in our actual positioning as we begin to move, but he also said, as you move through the wilderness, this is what you can anticipate. I mean, that was a briefing. That was a briefing from the strategist saying, and as you move, I cannot have you stepping out of formation. I need you to stay in the order and the structure that I established for you. I need you to stay still when I say not to move. And then I need you to be ready to move when I tell you to. And don't argue that you don't know how or that you're not equipped, because he literally gave you everything you need, including the giants that you're going to face in the wilderness, what the enemy will present, and how to combat it, because you're no longer in non-combatant status, but you are now ready to be combative in those things. And then once you get to the promised land, I'm gonna make it known to you the things that will challenge you there as well, so that you're prepared. Yeah. All of that came in one briefing before we even began to move. Okay, so we're no longer vulnerable to the things that we once were, and we're no longer living a life outside of that service role, and we're prepared for combat in a way that we haven't been before, and whatever that's meant to look like as his people as we move. So I'm really, really excited and anxious for tonight, because as we've all been in the portion all week, we see even in this equipping and even in the acknowledgement of we have everything we need, we're in formation, there's order, there's directives that have been given, there's covering, there's presence, there's all of these things, what's about to happen? What does that mean, and how do we then prepare ourselves to stay under the strategist and in that formation and not repeat, like we said last week, not repeat the history that he is allowing us to be a part of, but to walk as that unit together, no longer as individuals, right? Okay, so tonight we're ready.
That was really good. I'm glad you brought that up. That was going to bring up the aspect of no longer being civilians. This is such a significant corner that we're turning as a family, and this understanding is so critical, because we have the benefit of looking back at what happened and knowing how it plays out, and knowing that at this point they basically set themselves on a trajectory to spend another 38 years in the wilderness. Like, this is the point at which they set themselves on that trajectory. And, you know, who knows what would have happened if they didn't complain.
Yeah.
Right? As I got into this Torah portion over the weekend, I laughed when I just read verse 1.
Yeah.
And the people complain is just kind of funny. But we really have, there's so much understanding in these, I mean, every Torah portion, but just as Megan so greatly summarized, there's a paradigm shift that Yahweh is instilling in his people. And part of that paradigm shift is him dealing with everything that they took with them out of slavery, right? We've talked about that. And the big picture of where he's taking them is not just exiting systems, but being able to step into a place and overturn systems in the place that he promised to their fathers that they'll eventually occupy, right? So that's the big picture. And as we think about last week, one of the things that I want us to remember is that not only is Yahweh a strategist, but what he's doing, you can see the pattern in history of new nation states establishing militaries almost at the outset as part of their preserving their freedom, projecting their power, solidifying their identity. And that's such a foundational aspect of becoming a new nation. And in this Torah portion, we're going to see things being added to that as far as them being a new nation state. But just wanted us to remember that Yahweh is instituting elements of the society as we go through these Torah portions. And it's so funny to think about him. He's wanting us to mature beyond our impulses, and he's equipping us, he's training us, he's setting the groundwork and the framework for us to operate within. And then the very thing that he's trying to build up in us is the very thing that we see them having a problem with, right? Their own impulses, their why they're complaining, right? That's why he's taking all of these steps that we see in the previous Torah portion and even now to deal with, because he knows exactly what it is that they're going to have problems with, right? So just remember that the character of the enemies that they're going to deal with in the wilderness, which is wandering in the wilderness, is for training, it's for purifying your heart, it's for checking your motives, right? And the enemies that are in the wilderness are like a built-in facet to help these people overcome what it is that they're dealing with as far as their own motives, right? So if you guys remember, some of those characteristics were internal uprising is one of the characteristics of the enemies in the wilderness, is you're going to deal with internal issues. Lack of gratitude, which creates a great opportunity for the enemy to attack you or assault you. Right. If you think of that in terms of us today, or you think of yourself individually, if you're in a wilderness season, you're going to deal with internal battles, right? Which is going to make you susceptible to an assault from the enemy. Okay. And these are the things that Yahweh was trying to address, and those are the very things that they're immediately struggling with after all of that. Right, but what's so great about thinking about this in terms of none of us are civilians, and this wasn't a dynamic that occurred last week. In all truth, when you became a new creation, at that point you were no longer a civilian. We just maybe aren't thinking of it in those terms until now. Yeah. Right. So think about if we weren't operating in some type of understanding of that, even if we weren't putting those words on it, then you're essentially operating in a way that you are affording yourself certain luxuries that you shouldn't. Like complaining about your divine strategist is not really a luxury that we're afforded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? When he created you a new creation, that's not something that transferred from your slavery status, that now you still get to complain when you receive divine commandments or covenant community objectives or whatever the case may be. So if we aren't operating in that understanding up until recently, then we were most likely violating that by acting like a civilian, even though we're not civilians anymore. Okay, so I mean, this Torah portion is going to read us all. We're all going to relate to all of these things that are in here. But this Torah portion, I found myself laughing reading it through multiple points. But right in verse 1, and the people complained. It was like, this is awesome. So in the first verse, we see that the people are complaining and that Yahweh heard what was going on. And it talks about he heard them complaining about their misfortune or their adversity. And I can't help but hear that in like Yahweh's putting quotations around their adversity.
Yeah.
Because, and this is one dynamic that I think we have to work through in and of ourselves, is that when we don't totally understand this distinction of how we're supposed to walk and who we are and how we're called to govern, we can conflate adversity and bondage and confuse the two. And when I was talking about, remember at Tabernacles, I was saying, what are you fighting and what are you following? We can all probably think of a situation in our life where the adversity that we're facing within the divine context that Yahweh has us is what we're fighting. We're fighting the adversity that He, as a Father, is walking us through, and we're actually wanting to follow the bondage. We want to go back to bondage, but we'll fight His adversity, and then we'll confuse the two when we need to be following Him and walking through that adversity and not trying to go back to bondage. Right? So He was angry about it. And what was His response? This is interesting that Yahweh is, I'm going to get to why I suspect He was so angry about it, but He basically kindled a fire that consumed the outskirts of the camp. So we have to remember that they're camped, they're in formation. And that word outskirts, we're getting a mental picture that He basically brought fire down around the outer perimeter of the camp. That word outskirts actually is the same word as mixed multitude. So remember when we talked about the mixed multitude from Exodus 12, what does it consist of? It consists of the ethnically Hebrew people that left Egypt, right? The foreigners who came with them, but also subscribed to the covenant context of the nation of Israel. So they engaged in covenant with Yahweh, even though they were foreigners. They weren't ethnically Hebrew. They were part of the mixed multitude. And then there was a third aspect who were strangers, people who basically benefited from being rescued out of Egypt. They benefited from the society and the way that it was being built, but they did not subscribe to or engage in covenant community or covenant engagement with Yahweh. Okay, so you have this third element of the mixed multitude, which is people just basically benefiting from the society, but not subscribing to the elements of the society. Okay, so when Yahweh says that His fire burned and He let that fire fall on the outskirts, what He is talking about is those people that were part of the society, benefiting from the society, but not subscribing to what the societal norms would have been that Yahweh established. Okay, so we have to identify that and understand where His anger is being placed. Because essentially what happened is these people that were considered strangers of the mixed multitude, those were the people that started this whole problem.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, it's funny because I was thinking about, I think it was over Tabernacles when we were talking, whatever we were talking about, and Gabe specifically said, you're talking about food, right? Isn't it interesting? This whole issue is around food. You were talking about food and you were saying how you retain this 15% that you essentially, you don't want Yahweh to touch, right? And I want us to understand this, that 15%, and I'm not picking on Gabe, we all got to deal with it, right? Whatever that percentage is that you have in your mind that is essentially the mixed multitude in you, it's the stranger in you that doesn't want to subscribe to what it is the rest of you is subscribing to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you're not 100% in on whatever it is that you're convicted about and you're retaining that minority or that small percent to yourself, that's the stranger in you that is essentially representing the outskirts that Yahweh gets angry with. And it's that same small percent that's going to incite or provoke rebellion, and it's going to spread. And it's going to cause a problem for the entire body. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we have to deal with the mixed multitude in us. There's a mix inside of us, and we have to deal with that portion of the mix that isn't subscribing to the conviction like the rest of us is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, when you think of the outskirts, you have to remember the way the tabernacle is set up, the way the camp is set up, that Yahweh's presence is in the very center. It's central, so the further out you go, the less intimate you are with Him.
Yeah.
Right? In a community context, and this is a dynamic that we should be aware of, in a literal community context, if you're on the outskirts, or you're keeping yourself on the outskirts, or you're not engaging in that level of intimacy because you're not pressing into relationship, then that is problematic, because that could lead to being susceptible to allowing something to grow in you that will eventually continue to spread into the community.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? If you go and you're called to be a part of a community, don't remain on the outskirts.
Yes.
Right? In this context, it's not Yahweh's responsibility to go to the outskirts and bring His presence to the outskirts. You, part of this formation, you have to press into that to eliminate that mixed multitude in you. So these people who were that element, the strangers, the 15%, let's call it, they didn't want to give up part of their previous life. They refused to give it up. And out of that context is where the complaint started. But then the complaint caught on and everybody started crying out, complaining, accusing Yahweh. Right? But that's where it originated, in the outskirts, in the 15%. The places that we don't want to really subscribe fully, that's the place that's going to cause the problem. How many of you guys can articulate or summarize, like Megan did, what we talked about last week? Like, raise your hand if you feel like I can summarize. Okay, eventually I want us all to be, it doesn't have to be exactly, I'm not saying it has to be like Megan. She's very eloquent. Some of us are not that eloquent. But we should be able to understand the principles of what it means to not be a civilian, what's being required of us, what those dynamics are, what kind of enemies are we facing, where am I located in this formation, all of those things. We should be able to articulate those things to the point that we could teach somebody else. Right? And that's critical, because when you're not a civilian anymore, that's where freedom is interesting, because a lot of people think freedom is I just get to do whatever I want. Whereas freedom really means you have a whole lot more of a responsibility, because you're freedom. And if you're under an element of service, then you're definitely going to have expectations, right?
Yeah.
So we got to understand those things. So, and the people complain, and it says the grumblers started having cravings. Right? And if we read the text, it talks about they wish they could have meat for free. But what's interesting, when you break down that word craving, it really means they craved a craving. And I don't want us to focus so much on the food aspect, but the fact that they had a system operating within them that they just were craving a craving.
Yeah.
It could have been anything. Right? And when Yahweh is calling us to mature beyond our impulses, He's calling us to mature beyond the point that we have to act on a craving. It also is defined by they lusted a lust. That word craving means they lusted a lust. They craved a craving. They basically submitted themselves to a greedy desire. It could have been anything. And it says the rabble who were among them, which is interesting. That word rabble is another word for mixed multitude. It's actually those strangers. And when it says the rabble among them, that's how I know that it started with the strangers in the mixed multitude. This is who it's talking about, who incited this entire thing. And this is a system in and of ourselves that we have to learn to govern. Think about if you go, I don't even know if anybody in this house that does this. Like if you go on a diet, sounds weird to say because I don't think we do that. Or let's say you're fasting and you're only drinking water and you have a craving and you really want to eat. Well, the food is really not the issue. The issue is you learning how to govern your cravings so that you don't actually act out on and submit to your cravings, your greedy desires. Your desire to satisfy yourself.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's not necessarily about the food they were wanting to eat. It's the fact that they wanted to eat something other than what Yahweh was providing, and they didn't have the self-governance rather than self-satisfaction. They had self-satisfaction, not self-governance. Okay, when you're not a civilian anymore, that's one of those luxuries you don't have to just satisfy yourself all the time on a whim whenever you have a craving. So that's a system within ourselves that we have to learn to govern, because how are we going to govern and overturn things outside of ourselves if we can't even overturn a craving that we have for something that just satisfies our own flesh?
Yeah.
Right? That word's interesting too, because when it says crave a craving, deep in the definition of that word is basically they're craving food that gives them nothing. It's vain. It doesn't supply them anything. It doesn't produce anything effective. It's not meaningful. All it is gratuitous self-satisfaction for no other reason than just satisfying yourself. And you can see why Yahweh was so angry. Because he's building a military, he's forming a new nation state, he's giving them all the strategy, all the tactics, how to execute, how to defeat the enemy, how to take them to a place to bring them where he promised them, where he promised their fathers to bring them. He's doing all of this and imparting all of this wisdom and understanding, and they just want to serve themselves. They just want to go back to being civilians. I'd rather just be a civilian. And Yahweh's like, well, I chose you. That's not what I chose you for. So they had been out of their slavery. They had been conditioned to have cravings instead of being content. Contentment was not part of their DNA, their understanding, because they had been in the bondage system for so long that they were taught to act on cravings. They were taught with a system where you accumulate wealth, you hoard, you store up for the famine, right? You guys remember that in Egypt? They had to store up wealth for the famine. They had to do those type of things. They had to accumulate, they had to hoard, they had to do those things, right? There was no paradigm like we're talking about now. So I would challenge you, not even challenge you, this isn't something that we can just decide we want to do or not. As people that are no longer civilians, you have to figure out how to govern your cravings.
Yeah.
Right? And whatever that 15, if it's food, food is obviously a problem, because food is what got us all in this mess in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? Food is what Christianity just says we could just eat whatever we want. Like, food is such an issue. So let's all just focus on food and identify what Yahweh would say about your relationship with food, and then start to learn to govern, to have the discipline to govern your cravings and have those things submit to you, not the other way around. So for next week, over the course of the week, at some point, I want you guys to all pray about how you relate to food. What are those cravings? What are those cravings that you crave? What is that thing that you have, that you submit to, that you need to learn to govern? And as we're walking through these Torah portions, you can see how critical this is, hopefully by the end of this Torah portion, or even from reflecting on last week's, you can see how important this is to do this. So hopefully everybody has some type of, you've pressed in and you have some type of tangible perspective on that by next week. Okay? They said they were used to eating for free. That's what I was talking about. It didn't cost them anything. Right? This manna has an element of cost in a sense because it requires discipline, whereas they could just eat, like I said, gratuitously without discipline. It's totally in vain. There's really no point or advantage to that type of eating. I mean, just think about it in a practical sense. Whatever food you put in your mouth, what is it advantageous? If that was a determining factor on what type of food you consumed, and you could not eat any longer food that was not advantageous, there's no advantage. And if you're trying to think like, well, like the Doritos I ate with my sandwich, like if you're already trying to think of like,
how to make a
healthy. Right? Like if you just put it in those terms, what's the use? What's the advantage? What is the purpose? And if it doesn't have anything to do with outside of self-satisfaction, if that was the determining factor, how much of what you consume would you not consume anymore? What percentage of food would you no longer eat if those were the determining factors of what you consumed? Right? And that's, I would guess. And I think as a family, we're generally like we're moving on a path and we're generally healthier and we're more conscious. But I would imagine when you put it in these terms, like we've all got a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would submit probably the only person I know that could say like, yes, I abide by these terms is Mom. Because I watch her count it, weigh it. Is this going to benefit me?
Yeah.
Is this going to produce the advantage, like all those things? Yeah. Right? That's how you think when you're thinking like a soldier, not a civilian.
Yeah.
Right? So whatever Yahweh brings up with your food, think about it as that's the standard.
Yeah.
Right? Now what's interesting in verse 6, and this is why I think Yahweh gets so angry, because the people say, but now, like I can hear the accusation. Just even them saying, but now that we're here, now that you brought us here, right? They're being nostalgic about slavery. But now, like now that you did what you did, we have no appetite. That I can see that is Yahweh's just like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm burning it all down.
Yeah.
But you want to tell me now you don't want to eat? So they're saying they have no appetite, which means they're not hungry for the things that Yahweh's providing. That word appetite is actually nefesh, which means it's like your life energy. It's like your being, your life source. They're basically saying like, we just have no energy for what it is that you're providing.
Yeah.
We just don't. Nothing in me wants what you have to offer. Can't you? I mean, you can see why he would just be. And it's funny because this relationship that Yahweh and Moshe, Yahweh gets all fired up. He's ready to start taking us out, and then Moshe's like, "Well, can we talk about this?" And then he like. He backs off of what he's going to do a little bit. But Those are the things that we have to be aware of. We have to govern the outskirts.
Yeah.
We have to deal with the parts of ourselves individually and in our communities. We have to govern the dynamics on the outskirts, because on the outskirts is where problems are going to originate.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
Whether that's the thing that's in you that's not subscribing fully to the standards, or whether that's a part of you or a person that is just refusing to press into the intimacy that this whole community is centralized on or based on. Right? Those are both problems that we're seeing here that are causing Yahweh's fire to come down in just 38 years in the wilderness now. Whereas like I said, we don't know what it would have been. So we have to govern the outskirts. Nostalgia and longing for vain desires undermines mission focus because it's obsolete. Remember last week, there's ways that we operate, or ways that we think, or ways that we process, that as civilians, we were able to do those things. But when you're no longer a civilian, those things are obsolete. Those things go out the window with your nature as a civilian. It's gone. It's out the window. Right? So, because we have covenant community objectives and we're no longer just about ourselves, now we have a mission that we're focused on, and we can't undermine that mission because we're tolerating things on the outskirts, or things that are outside of intimacy with Him, or things that we don't want to fully submit to Him. We can't do that because it will be detrimental to the entire community. Right? Because that's how we think now. In terms of the mission, the entire community, the health of the entire community. What's my role? How does that impact everybody?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like these are things that Yahweh is imparting, that you can wrestle for sure, right? I'm not saying that it's just flipping a switch and everybody's just, you know, 100% dialed in, operating in this paradigm, and there's no issues, right? It's going to be a struggle, but this is one of those things where it's such a contrary paradigm that Scripture and Torah is imparting, that if you don't wrestle it out with a good heart, if you're just like, well, I'll think about that later,
yeah,
like that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Like these are things that we're just getting to the place to where this is what Christianity always said it was about.
Right.
Like not specifically these things, but
yeah.
If we've said our whole lives, like, we're about following God and praise God, and I live for Him, and I just want to walk out my faith, and I'm blessed, and all this stuff, like, we say all that stuff, and this is what it is really about.
Yeah.
So like now it's the rubber's meeting the road, and it's the nitty gritty, and this is what it is.
Yeah.
Right? So are we about all this life, or are we not?
Yeah.
Right? Are we about this? Right? And if we say we are, like, we have very clear revelation and impartation that we cannot afford, like a civilian, to just think about it later.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we really can't afford, now that we know the standard, the absolute standard on food, right? We don't adjust the standard to where we're at. We try to grow to the standard.
Yeah.
Now that we know that there's a very clear standard of, if I open a bag of Doritos and I pop up on your shoulder and I'm like, is that going to, how advantageous is that to you and to the family?
Right.
Yeah.
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 And then you're like, can't eat these dang Doritos.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
We just at least have to know the standard, and we have to know what our issues are that Yahweh points out with food, so that we can begin to mature beyond our impulses, so that we can govern ourselves, so that we can then operate how we're supposed to in a community context, so we can step into the promise and not have to wait 38 years.
Yes.
Right? So we have all this complaining, and then the Torah portion breaks down what manna is, which is funny because when you look up the word, the definition is, what is it? Like, I always look up words to see what it is, and the definition was, what is it? So it's like this mysterious, this crazy, divine, mysterious thing that is really cool, because somebody equated how much manna had to fall every day, and it was 2,200 metric tons every day. And it's such an extreme amount that this article I was reading, the guy was calculating how the natural earth couldn't even produce that much every day. Like the plants, the oxygen, like it wasn't, the natural atmosphere was not such that it could even naturally produce that much. 2,200 metric tons. And it's the perfect nutrition for an entire army. Right? If we're talking about last Torah portion was strategy and tactics and a divine field manual, this is logistics and economic things that he's implementing into his nation. Right? He's how would they operate if they couldn't eat every day?
Yeah.
Right? You have this the first sacred army on the face of the planet, and you have to feed them every day.
Yes.
Right? Think about deploying a whole nation's army. You have to have logistics. They have to have food. They have to have all these things to operate. Right, so last week we had the strategy and the tactics. This week we have the economy of manna and the logistics that manna represents. It's divine provision, but literally, what is it? We don't even know what it is. It's a divine equalizer, and what it does is it becomes a mechanism that's anti-poverty. When you think about being in Egypt in slavery, like I said, you had to store things up, you had to accumulate wealth, you had to hoard for yourself, you had to fight for your own portions. There was a big disparity in society. You know, people had little, people had much, people had surplus, all these things. Well, this divine manna was anti-poverty because you couldn't, it says in the scriptures, some could gather much and wouldn't have leftovers, and some would gather little and they wouldn't lack. Right? No matter how much you gathered, right, whether you didn't really put in that much work to gather it, or whether you tried to gather as much of it as you could, you wouldn't have any left over and you wouldn't be lacking anything. So there's literally, which is weird, and I went on this whole rabbit hole, because there's economic factors built into this. And basically what Yahweh's dispersing to his nation is he's dispersing this provision that has equity, which is a word I hate, built into it. Because the outcome is the same for everybody. Right? Equity is equal outcomes. Equality is equal opportunity. This isn't an equal opportunity where he just disperses it and whoever gets out there in the morning gets whatever they get.
Yeah.
And whatever's left over, the rest of the people that woke up late don't get any.
Yeah.
Right? That's equality. This is equity built in. Which I hate that word, so I went on this whole rabbit hole trying to figure out what does scripture say about economy. And I got to a place where I was like, okay, this makes sense. So I was satisfied with that. If you wanna dig into that, if that bothers you, does that bother anybody else? If that does bother you, look at manna and talents and research talents and what the divine economy aspects were with the talents and what it is with manna and connected to. And I'd love to talk to you guys about it because it's super interesting. But he had equity built into this. So he dispersed it. You could gather, people could gather as much as they wanted to, or they could have been not really gathering that much, and there wouldn't ever be leftovers, and there wouldn't ever be anybody lacking. Okay? So on a daily disbursement, he's dispersing this manna daily. It has a expiration date built into it, let's say 24 hours, right? So it's anti-poverty because you can't hoard it.
Yeah.
If you try to hoard it, it literally goes bad and then you can't eat it.
Yep.
Right? And you can't lack. It's just this crazy divine protocol that he's dispersing into this nation as a purely divine logistical mechanism to keep this army going. Can't accumulate it. It's designed to expire. It's obedience and dependence based. Right? There's no performance element. Think about businesses or capitalism. There's absolutely no performance element, because you're expected to depend on the daily disbursement and be obedient to collect it and consume it within the same day. Built-in equity. And the crazy thing, the cool thing is that there's a Sabbath exclusion to where it doesn't go bad when you prepare for the Sabbath. It actually lasts twice as long.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, what? It's crazy. But the thing is, it's not about, think about this, it's not about the food. Mm-hmm. It's about the source of the food. They were complaining about the food rather than focusing on the source of the food. The source of the food in Egypt was Pharaoh. Right? The source of the food here is Yahweh. Which just makes me think, like, if Yahweh directed you to eat oatmeal for the next year and all you could eat was oatmeal, it's the source of the food that you should be focused on and trusting and being obedient and dependent that's going to provide you what you need, rather than you can either obey me or you can eat whatever you want for the next year.
Yeah.
I'll take the oatmeal for the year because it's the source directing me rather than me directing me. Right? Like I said, it was impossible for this to be naturally generated. Just as a side note, if you want to look at the continuity of Scripture, you can look at John 6, 32 through 35, where Yeshua says, "I am the bread from heaven." So think about Yeshua as a literal economic vessel of the kingdom. It's just crazy when you start like really getting into these Torah portions and you really dive into like what is happening, and then you begin to have a better understanding of what Yeshua is. He's not just a savior. He's actually like a divine economy walking on earth. This Torah portion was short, but there's so much packed in here. Like I said, there's logistics, there's leadership dynamics packed in here, because when you look at Moshe, there's a distinction between the burden that he carried and what he did with it, and the burden that the people had and what they did with their burden. Right? Everybody's burden in this Torah portion, but there's a distinction in how Moshe deals with the burden that he's carrying versus the people and their adversity burden, right? Their false burden that they're crying out about. They stay on the outskirts when they start to deal with theirs. What does Moshe do? He goes right into the center and he deals directly with Yahweh. So there's an intimacy aspect of leadership, and there's a different focus on burdens, the outskirts versus how Moshe dealt with it. Moshe said in verses 10 through 15, that he was carrying the burden of a people he did not conceive or birth. Yet he was assigned to carry them in his bosom until they made it to the promised land, which was promised to their fathers. That's crazy to think about. He's saying, these people are not mine, but you told me to carry them as if they're mine. And not only that, all the way until the promised land, which was promised to their fathers. So he's carrying the burden of upholding a generational promise that Yahweh made to these people that he's not even going to get to benefit from. So he has to be the instrument to fulfill the promise that was made generationally to their fathers to get them to where they were promised, to a place that he can't enter. For people he didn't birth or conceive, but he was told, you need to carry them to get them to that place. That was the burden he was carrying, and he went right to Yahweh with it. Basically saying, like, what? He's saying, I can't deal with all this nonsense. Kill me. Kill me if this is what I have to deal with, right? But he's also acknowledging the weight of the burden that he carries, which his burden is those people and their destiny, the fulfillment of their promises that they're not even concerned about. Their burden, their adversity is self-satisfaction and not being able to govern themselves is the burden they're carrying and crying out for and complaining amongst each other and inciting a whole nation to complain. So his whole interaction is a personal reflection with Adonai directly in the heart of the camp, whereas all this whole issue started on the outskirts. So here you have Yahweh's response to Moshe's burden, right? So you have, they're both carrying burdens. There's two burdens here, the burden of the people and the burden of Moshe. And you have Yahweh responding to the people and responding to Moshe. His response to the people's adversity was, I'm going to destroy you, right? Yes. Moshe had to step in as an intercessor once again and ease Yahweh out of his full anger to just destroy everybody, right? Yahweh's response to Moshe is to mitigate his burden by establishing more leaders, essentially decentralizing leadership and establishing more leaders. And what's interesting is Yahweh says, bring them to the tent. I'm going to take... It's really cool the way he says it, because he acknowledges that Moshe is anointed by Ruach, right? But he says, I'm going to take some of the Ruach that's on you, and I'm going to put that same Ruach on all 70 of those leaders. So Yahweh's acknowledging that Moshe is carrying an anointing, because he's saying, I'm going to take some of that from you and give it to them. And he essentially multiplies Moshe by 70 so that there's decentralized authority and delegated authority among 70 elders of Moshe's choosing, so that they can more easily manage and direct this whole nation of people. So the burden of governing is then shared upon the shoulders of all 70 of those people. And how amazing is that? That Moshe's, his complaint, right? And I would say it's a pretty real complaint. I can only imagine his grief, his level of grief, as they're knocking on his tent and they're all complaining. However many, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are now wailing and crying about, they just want to satisfy themselves, and he's just like, just kill me. Yeah. I'm not even going to where they're going, but I'm responsible to take them there. Yeah. Just kill me now.
Yeah.
And Yahweh's like, I got you. Like, go pick 70 more people. I'll give them your anointing. We'll, you know, and he just mitigates his complaint. But I think it's cool that must have been a real emotional, like, Like, he's essentially saying, Yahweh, kill me. Take me out. I don't want to deal with this. Right? So then you have this prophetic engagement, and there's a proper perspective on leadership. And there's this random insert about Joshua being upset that other people are prophesying inside the camp and it's not Moshe. You know, it's just something interesting to think about, because Moshe basically says, like, no, this is a good thing. It doesn't just have to be me. It's good that Yahweh is dispersing the anointing so that we can continue to operate, right? Instead of saying or playing into that or fighting that and saying, no, I'd rather it just be me. That's the one that's speaking to everybody, prophesying, giving everybody the direction. He acknowledged, I can't do this on my own.
Yeah.
I can't deal with all this. I need delegated authority dispersed out. So this is the other funny part, is Yahweh, I feel like this just makes me feel good as a dad. Because what they complained for, he's like, I'm going to give you so much of what you think you want. Because ultimately what he's doing is he's because he's trying to build this out of them, and he's trying to mature them beyond this selfish impulse, he's basically taking his covering off, because he knows that their desire for self-satisfaction is so strong that they won't be able to restrict themselves. So he brings in quails from all over the place, to the point that they're just stacked up all around the outskirts of the camp, right, where the complaining started. He allows quails and meat to just be overly abundantly available. And what does it say? It says they went out day and night and collected. Right? With the manna, they're just supposed to go out during the day, because they have the obedience and the dependence on him that they're going to get what they need for the day. They're going to consume it that day. Right? So he gave them all this meat, and he just lifted his... He let them do themselves in. Right? Because he knew that I'm going to allow you to just give into your immature, unrestrained greed. And they were eating so much meat, it says it was coming out of their nostrils. I mean, that's like just pure gluttony. Right? Like, you ever go to those Brazilian places where you flip the thing and they just keep bringing you meat? Right? And then you start sweating, and it's like grease, you know? You're just like, oh my God. I can only imagine. I can actually picture them eating meat to the point to where their like snot is like, isn't that disgusting? But he didn't make them do it. That was just a consequence of their greedy desire. Which is a system that was in them from bondage that he's building out of them. They could not govern themselves to stop eating.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all they were doing. He's like, you want to complain? You want what you used to have? I will let you have it.
Yeah.
Right? It's like when your kids are like, I'm gonna run away, because it's how it's like, here, pack a duffel bag and here you go. Right? Watch them walk down the street. Like, sometimes mom's like, no, you can't. And I'm like, pack your stuff. You want it, you know, you want to be on your own? Like, that's what Yahweh's doing. Just makes me feel warm and fuzzy. But we have to reflect on ourselves, right? Like I said in the beginning, when we start to look at ourselves, what is it that we're not depending on Yahweh for, that he has fully provided, that we still feel like we have to lean on our own performance, and we're doubling the work on ourselves because we're collecting day and night, we're working day and night, we're hoarding, we're trying to accumulate, right? It's all based on performance. There's a fear that we have to get it, Because if we don't get it, somebody else is going to get it. Whatever that is, what are those things that we are operating in that we have to mature out of? And remember last week we talked about divine timing. This is all a violation of divine timing protocols, hoarding and accumulation, because he gave a specific time when all of this would be dispersed and you're supposed to collect it within a certain time frame, and they're violating the divine timing. It's interesting that he taught us about Moedim time, right? Instead of Chronos time. He's trying to switch them over to divine timing, and it's linked to their provision. And it talks about them being struck with a plague. I suspect because they had so much collected that it started to go rancid, and that's what caused the issue. Because they didn't have enough self-governance or obedience or discipline that they began hoarding this and stocking so much more than they could actually eat. And because they couldn't restrict themselves from eating it, they were even eating meat that had gone bad. Like imagine your desire is so bad that you're just going to keep eating it and consuming it even though it's not good for you anymore. Like literally physically not good for you anymore. This is a lot to think about in this Torah portion. And we've probably all heard 5 sermons about how they complained and this and that. But there's deeper levels of Yahweh establishing elements of his new nation state. There's an economy at play. There's leadership dynamics that he's establishing. There's logistics at play, right? And he's doing it in the midst of the very things that he's training them for. Obviously, he knows what he's doing because the very things he's training us out of is the immediate thing that they're dealing with that sets them on a 38-year trajectory. And I can't emphasize enough, I think it's amazing to understand it this way because I can't emphasize it enough how we as a family, whether you choose to believe this or not, this is the truth. Whether you decide I'm going to think about it later or not, this is the truth. That this family is beginning to understand how to really operate in a covenant community, and it means more than just what we've understood at a family level. We're family. We love each other. We engage in covenant. We don't just walk out on covenant, right? We've understood it at a certain level. That's amazing. But he's bringing it to another level where there's strategy, there's tactics, there's an actual government being instituted, and we're called to operate within the bounds of that government, which means we have to understand these things. How can you understand a covenant community and what Yahweh asked you to do that is absolutely connected to that community if you don't even understand what's happening inside yourself? Right? I just think it's so amazing that food is such an issue. Like it is the issue. That we have to understand how we relate to food and what we consume, why we consume it, what is it doing for us? Am I just purely satisfying myself? What is the purpose of this? And then if you think about it, if you start to walk towards that standard and you adhere to that standard and you understand what's going on inside you, what is that going to do just as fruit of trying to obtain that standard? Right, and I have my 15%, right? There's stuff I eat that it's like it doesn't purely, like the other night, Kaya was up late. I think it was like midnight. She was up late. She's always up late. And I came outside, started making a sandwich. Like, why? It's at friggin' midnight. That, what does that do? That didn't do me any good other than just like, oh my God, I have a craving. I need to go make a sandwich right now. Right? I didn't need that. And I probably ate some Cheetos or something, some Doritos or something like that. There's no advantage to that whatsoever. But we have to I'm joking about it with easy examples, but we have to understand how to govern our cravings.
Yeah.
Like I would challenge you guys to pray if you should fast or not. How long? Ask Yahweh, should I fast? I'm not saying you should fast. Pray about it when you're praying about food. Should I fast? How long should I fast? What do I need to avoid? As a training, setting yourself up, you're putting yourself in a manufactured situation to allow Yahweh to train you to govern your cravings.
Yeah.
Like, put yourself in a situation that's going to highlight the cravings. Because when you're not eating, your spirit's more aware, your flesh is out of the way, and those cravings are going to highlight, and you're going to be like right in it, dealing with it. Like I would challenge all of you to do that. Pray about it. Should I fast? How long should I fast? See what cravings come up, and how Yahweh directs you to deal with that, and how is it tied to all of this, and what does that mean as a member of this formation that Yahweh's forming. Amen. This is not fun stuff, but it is. But do, like I said, are we about this or not? Right? Like, don't say I'm a follower of the way, I love Jesus. Like, don't say any of that stuff if we're not down to engage what it really is about. Right? That's what I mean when I say, like, we're not here to play church. Like, if this is what we're doing, then that's what we're doing. You know, I don't, as we walk through this, as we're walking through this wilderness, I don't want to be on the trajectory when we have the benefit. Apostle Paul says we have these things for our instruction. I don't want to ignore what we have, that we can see the whole story for our instruction. And then us as a family, we got to just spend more time in the wilderness because we're just going to immediately start complaining. Right, we're immediately going to crave cravings. We're immediately going to go into self-satisfaction. I mean, that's what he's saying. Are we no longer civilians, or are we going to just totally be governed by selfish desire? I mean, that's the bottom line of what we're talking about. Right, and we have to choose. You have to choose in your mind right now. Am I going to continue to be governed by selfish desire? Or am I going to mature beyond that to where I can govern things outside of myself? Mm-hmm. So a lot to think about this week. I'm guessing this is probably Gabe's favorite sermon of the year right here.
Thanks for talking about me for an hour. The multitude in me. That's some good stuff. You know what I like about that? There's no room to like maneuver around it. It's so simple and direct. I don't know how to avoid that. It's like an undodgeable ball. It's just going to hit you no matter what. I was thinking about today reading the Torah portion again and preparing myself for tonight. And I was thinking about, you know, obviously complaining. That's what this whole thing is about. They're complaining. They're not content with the provision that Yahweh has given them. And they start complaining. And I start obviously self-evaluating, thinking about myself, finances. Do I complain in my finances? And am I complaining about the state of my finances? Am I complaining that I don't have enough of this or enough of that, or I can't have this or I can't have that? And then I started thinking, if I'm not complaining, does that mean I'm complacent in certain things? And I started thinking, well, what's the difference between complacency and content? Like, they seem so almost similar. but they're a lot different. And I think it's a fine line between being content and being complacent. So I started looking up the differences. These are the conclusions I came to, the difference between complacency and content. Being content means that you are operating with gratitude and peace with where you are and have not lost your drive and awareness. I mean, you could still be content but still have vision and purpose. Whereas being complacent means that you have become comfortable, too comfortable to the point of neglect. This is peace without pursuit, which is zero growth, zero challenging yourself, zero alertness. So essentially it's like peace with progress versus peace without progress. So I just started thinking like in terms of my finances and provision and just obviously I didn't go down the route of food. it's obvious this whole thing's about food, but I think in perspective too with our finances is getting the multitude out of us, you know, being diligent in our finances and not complaining and being grateful and operating with gratitude and even dealing with complacency in ourselves if we are just complaining without movement or complaining without progress or complaining without a vision or a purpose. And I think for me, I don't know about anybody else, but I know I can almost straddle the line with content and complacency. It's very close. You just be really, I'm just really happy, and then you don't know that it turned complacent. And so I think that is, you know, even going back to being a tactician, you know, you have to be alert and aware all the time. You know, Dad, you know, security team talks about situational awareness all the time. And so just being aware of yourself and be aware of our complaining. Also, complaining means you don't trust in Yahweh. And that is a big deal when it comes to finances. Do we trust in Yahweh? Or do we struggle or take it on ourselves? And then we become the husband and we become the strategist. So, I mean, I feel like the last 3-4 weeks can be really directed and kind of summed up throughout. You know, it feels like they're just, mom and dad are just building and building on top of the principles and precepts of the week before and the week before and the week before. And it's super powerful and really good. So I hope that we are taking to heart what is being released and really taking these, you know, mission briefings as part of what our mission is when we walk out of this building. So let's not be complacent in our finances. Let's not complain. Let's keep our hearts in check and deal with the multitude within us. Cool?
Oh, and first fruits.
Almost forgot. Today's first fruits. So hope you guys brought your first fruit offerings. We've transitioned to the month of Cheshvan, which is exciting. This is one of my favorite months. It is the month where the flood happened, which is pretty cool. This is also the month where there is no holidays, and it's a month of rest. But I want it to be clear that it's not a month of rest for doing nothing, but it's a month of rest because the last feast, Tabernacles, the 10 days of awe, Yom Kippur, all of those, Yahweh gave instruction. He gave some challenges. He gave some life changes for each and every one of us. And this month is a month that we take to walk out the practical. So we rest in movement. And what is this going to look like now that I'm a different person, now that I'm restored, now that I have a new way of living? How do I actually implement the things in my life to continue going that direction and not go back to Egypt? Not go back to the things that were easy before, or things that were habits, habitual, that we used to function in. So this month is a month where we could either flood ourselves with what we need to be doing, or we can be flooded and drown. So that's another good word for you guys. Let's get our first fruits and let's sow into Yahweh's timing. Cool.
As you guys finish offering, you want to make your way over to the communion table. We will move into communion. All right, you guys, everybody have their communion? Yes? Okay. All right, so I would like for our communion time to be very intimate and personal for you. There's a couple of things that I want to send you into, and one of those is going back to the last time that we took communion out of First Fruits, so not Tabernacles, but before, where we engaged the elements out of a response to the invitation. Does everyone remember the way that we were invited into receiving this? In a way that felt like it was for the first time, because it was this expression after expression of his jealous heart for you. And then you had the opportunity to respond to that when mom released. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as you hold these elements and we take the word that was just released about how we will no longer have an appetite for the things that Yahweh provides. This is an expression of his provision. So the redemption, the freedom, the restoration over his people, over your life, and over the generations of the lives after you, those are all his provision. So when the people began to grumble and when their hearts were dissatisfied or not content with what he had provided, this is an expression of that in your life. Meaning your grumbling, my grumbling, is a response to this. When I say I'm dissatisfied with your provision, or I say I need more, it's dismissing this.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. That if it's all been done for you, but there's still a demand or a lack of contentment because you think you know what you need, and he says, I know what you need, which is why I paid a cost for you to be able to have access to what you truly need. And we say, no, that's not good enough. Or no, that's not what I'm in need of. I need this.
Mm-hmm.
It's dismissing the life that sounds old, but I feel like it's new.
Mm-hmm.
To say that it's dismissing the life that was literally given for you, but that you have access to, which doesn't look like self-satisfaction, which is why we can dismiss it, right? Because it freedom, the freedom that comes with this doesn't feel like satisfaction to our flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, I need something different, or I want something more.
Yeah.
Right? So when Dad's talking about consuming something that's advantageous, and we step into communion, you're consuming something that has always been advantageous for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to access that every day in your life submitted to him. So take a moment before you engage it, before you eat and before you drink. And if there's a reconciling that needs to be done in your attitude, like the actual attitude of your heart's posture towards him in grumbling or in, I don't want that, I need this, before you drink, reconcile that and then take of this from a pure heart that's acknowledging that this is all that you need, and all of the equipping that comes with it is what you have permission to move in as a son. Okay? All right. So when you're ready, you can, but make sure that it's out of a pure place. Okay?
All right, family, as you finish up with your communion, I just want us to be mindful of, again, what was just released. I know that there was so many pieces of it and a lot of just personal activation to be going home with. And I'm hoping that we're not just hearing that in a sense of like, okay, cool, but recognizing like where we are. And Dad really spoke to it, but recognizing that this is a decision point of what the next 38 years looks like. And if we are going to be stuck in a place going around and around and not moving and being stagnant, or if we're going to choose to say, I will lay down what is in me so that I don't have to be a generation that dies off before we can continue moving. And that is like that hard decision. So when he's saying like, choose now, decide now, there's a safeguarding in that, because the father of the house knows as soon as you walk out those doors, as soon as we close the service, your brain's already going. It's if it's not already of rationalizing, trying to think through like, okay, well, I can do this, but maybe not this, or this is kind of what that meant. Or like making our own decisions, kind of stepping back into that husband's seat again, rather than clear directive, establish what's on the, figure out what's on the outskirts, deal with it, and don't let that affect the community.
Yeah.
Because my decision affects you, and your decision affects me.
Right.
Right? And being in covenant community means that whether you choose to lay down the Doritos or not, is going to affect us.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have heard Mom say it time and time again. Do we have to keep doing this?
Right.
Can we move on? Can we keep going? This is that decision point.
Yeah.
This is that point where it's like, okay, I like, it might suck. You might have to lay down a favorite. You might have to lay down the thing that has been what you go to in survival mode to get through. It might be your coping mechanism. It might be what you're used to. But are we willing to do that? Are we willing to lay that down, or are we choosing at this point to take another 38 years? Some of us aren't even 38. Like that's a whole other lifetime. That's a whole other generation or two. Think about that impact in that decision. So when he's saying decide now, like decide now.
Yeah.
Are you a soldier or are you a civilian?
Yeah.
How are we walking that out? And are we going to do that to the fullest?
Yeah.
Because it's in those little areas of compromise where it's like, okay, well, maybe I'll go down to 5%. I'll give 10. No, like it's laid down.
Yeah.
And as a covenant community, that means you hold me accountable. That means when somebody checks in on Vox and says, hey, how are we doing? I'm going to respond.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to hide. Okay. I'm not going to wait till somebody really presses me and gets in my face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to be advantageous about it and do the work to get to a place so that we're not stuck because of me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so as when he released that, I want us to take that seriously. Go back through. What were the questions he was asking us? What are those things on the outskirts?
Yeah.
What are those things that we've like kind of just let linger?
Mm-hmm.
What is that self-preserving? What are we lusting after?
Mm-hmm.
What are we eating? What are we eating till we're blue in the face and know fully well that's not good for me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. One thing I just want to be mindful of is the excuse of I don't have time. He had mentioned that like that is associated with like having no appetite. So if we correlate those two, not having an appetite looks like the excuse of I don't have time. You're gonna have to make time.
Yeah.
That means you might have to shift some things around. That means you might have to cling a little bit and figure out what that looks like. That means you might have to lean on someone. That means you might need some discipleship. That means you might have to be pressed beyond what we've known, right? Food is a big issue. Nobody in here has walked out food besides mom. So nobody in here has anything that's like, okay, well, that wasn't me, right? That's all of us. Okay. So when I check in, I'm like, hey, how we doing? I want to see all of these responses, because mine will be right there, too.
Okay.
All right, we'll take that. Take it home with you. Work through those questions. Decide now. We'll keep moving together. Okay?
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.